Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Radio.com Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
All right, it is my pleasure and privilege now to introduce one of my favorite players who I ever covered. I covered him with the Yankees in the early 90s, actually got to New York in 89, right after winning the World Series with the Dodgers, a miracle Dodger win in that World Series. I think that ranks right there with the 69 Mets as two of the most surprising and fantastic World Series winners. So we're going to ask Steve Sachs about that and about the current Dodger team. And it's just great timing to have Steve. Steve is also a 14-year career, five-time MLB All-Star, seven times. He answered the bell. Seven times, played in 155 games or more. That's amazing to me. Incredible. Must have played and heard a lot. So incredible job. And now Steve Sachs, who is a fantastic talker, as you will see, without that New York accent that I have, but a fantastic talker, and works at MLB Network Radio now and does a terrific job for them. So welcome, Steve. It's great to have you, Tony Gwynn Jr., alongside.
Hey, guys. Nice to be with you, Tony Gwynn Jr. Good to be with you. John Heyman, I remember the days when you were just a lonely little journalist covering the team. And we had a lot of good times, a lot of fun there, you know, playing ball. And I know I respected your job and what you did, and you were always good at it.
Yeah, Steve was fantastic with the journalists and really respected us. And he's a fun guy, I'll put it that way. I'd say along with Chili Davis, right there at the top of my the favorite guys I ever covered as a big guy.
Terrific guy.
So I got to ask you now, I mean, the Dodgers are on the precipice. They've been here before. It's been since 1988, so 32 years. You were a part of that team. You think this team does it? Can they put it over the top? And can you believe it's considering they've had a winning team in almost all those years, it seems like, and certainly a contending team. They won the division the last 8 years in a row. I mean, it's about time, right? They're going to have to win this time, right?
Sure. John, it's been such a long time, as you mentioned, since 1988. The team has been to the World Series three of the four last years. Eight times consecutively, they've won the National League West. You'd think that just by happenstance of being in there, they'd get in the way of a couple of these World Series victories, but it hasn't happened yet. But this is a really good team right now, especially with the addition of Mookie Betts at the top of that order. Him and Seager have created one of the best 1-2 tandems in all of baseball. You can look across the spectrum and talk about Albies and Acuna, or maybe Eaton and Turner. There's a few good ones, but this one is amongst the best, especially when you got a guy like Corey Seager that is just hotter than a firecracker right now. This team is well suited to score runs no matter who's pitching.
So true, Steve. I got to ask you, because you were part of the two World Series teams that the Dodgers have experienced, 81 and 88. Can you sum up what it would be like or the significance of a championship for the Los Angeles Dodgers?
Oh, this would be amazing. Those teams were vastly different when you talk about the 81 and the 88 teams. The 81 team was marred by the stoppages that we had and really had to convert that season into two different seasons. And in doing so, you kind of alienated the best team in the National League, which was the Cincinnati Reds. They had the best record, and yet they weren't in postseason. So Dodgers got an opportunity to get in there. They made the most of it. But that 88 team was one that, as John pointed out, this was just a one in a million chance for us to win with the talent that we were putting up against the Mets, who beat us 10 of 11 during the regular season. One game was washed out that never got made up. And then, of course, against the Bash Brothers and the Oakland A's, we had no chance based on personnel against theirs. But we had great pitching, we had solid defense, and we had tremendous team unity, which you know, gets a bit underscored, I believe, in today's world. It's all based on numbers. That team was just laden with personalities and togetherness, and that's why we won.
Yeah, I mean, I went back and looked at it, and I think you won 94, 95 games. And then, of course, you beat the Mets in seven games. You had Hershiser going, pitching a shutout in game seven. Then that big hit, a home run by Gibson that we will never forget. I was there for that. I had the thankless task of interviewing Dennis Eckersley afterward, and he was terrific about it. But it was quite something. But did you guys, as you were going along, because I know when you played the Mets and you had lost 10 of 11, as we all recall now, and looking back at the stats of your team, you had Gibson at 25 home runs, Marshall at 20. You had you at the top of the lineup, a good leadoff hitter. But beyond those three, you know, you had what looks like a lot of complimentary type players, you know, obviously clutch players, guys who did a great job at the time. But did you guys going into that, because I thought at the beginning of that series you had no shot. Did you guys actually think that you were going to win that series and the whole thing?
Well, John, you know what? We believed in ourselves and we kept winning as the season went along. And we did it in a bunch of different ways. We really shored up our defense with John Shelby and Alfredo Griffin, two acquisitions that really shored up the middle part of our defense in the center of the diamond. That made a big difference. We got Jay Howell, which made a big difference in the bullpen. We made the trade for John Tudor, which really helped us out a lot. So our team was built basically on defense and pitching. I mean, Kirk Gibson won the MVP that year with 25 home runs, and he drove in, 90 runs, I think. That's it. He hit about 290. This was that's a good half for Miguel Cabrera in his day, right? Gibby wins the MVP, and it was just a crazy thing where, you know, most pundits that year picked us to finish fourth in our division, and yet we were able to go on and win the World Series. You know, hey, listen, we had guys like Tim Leary, who basically was commuting from Los Angeles to Tijuana in the wintertime before the 88 season, learning to throw that split finger with more efficiency. And he did that. He would drive back and forth every week, pitch once a week. He wound up winning 17 games for us that year. But what for Tim Leary, we probably don't get into postseason. So it's things like that that really came full circle for us.
Steve, I got to ask you, you stole 40 or more bases in six different seasons in your career. And just going back to last night's game, what did you think of Manny Margot's attempt to steal home in that situation last night?
Well, it was a real gutsy play. If he makes it, it's the greatest thing in the world. If it doesn't, he really got Clayton Kershaw off the hook. I mean, he was in trouble in that inning. He had first and third with nobody out. He got a pop-up, then he struck out Willy Adames with a backdoor curveball that he couldn't reach. But he was still, you know, in a bit of hot water, and then when he tried to steal home there, I get the what he was doing. Kershaw can't see him. He does that high, you know, over the head with his hands. He timed it pretty good, but Kershaw's no chump. I mean, he's been around, and everybody yells, hey, step off. He's not going to panic and balk. He did it the right way. He throws the ball on target to home plate, and then he applies the tag. And, you know, hey, if he makes it, it's a great move, but he really got Kershaw out of some hot water there.
I'm glad Tony brought up the steal there, the attempted steal. I kind of jogged my thought here. You know, you played even though it wasn't that long ago, it was a much different era. You know, I don't have your stats right in front of me, but as Tony mentioned, you stole a lot of bases and you had a lot of attempts of steals too. And it doubles and triples. I think you hit double digit home runs only once. That was typical of a leadoff hitter back then. You know, what do you think about the way the game has changed now, where everybody's worried about launch angle? And I mean, even the Rays, we all admire the fact that they're there and doing it and could be the next 69 Mets if they pull it off, or the 88 Dodgers if they pull it off, an incredible upset. They're even reliant on the home run. I mean, without a Rosarena and Lau home runs, you know, they're not scoring any runs. It's a totally different game. Do you appreciate this game, or do you think it was better before? I kind of like the excitement of the doubles, the triples, and the stolen bases, and I miss them. But what do you think?
I do too. And you know, I don't want to be one of those guys that, you know, the further you get away from the game, the longer it's been, you know, the better you were. I think athletes are better. I think athletes are better today. They're more dynamic. They can run faster and they can hit the ball further and all that. So with that being said, I kind of like a blend of the two. I think speed game's going to come back. We were talking to one of the scouts on MLB Network Radio the other day, and they said that they still covet the fact that guys can run fast and those athletic things that they do are going to be still important, which means that I think that the speed game is going to come back. There's something to be said about guys that can put pressure on the defense. I like the long ball. It's all fine, but I think working a count just to get into the pitcher's the depth of a pitcher's pitch count is all where it's at. I don't think that's the case. I think that if you take two pitches right down the middle just to get to a 3-2 count, only to swing at a pitch that's on the edge of the plate, I don't like that idea. I think getting something you can drive, and even if it's early in the count, go ahead and do it, because on-base percentage is fine, but an on-base percentage with no hit is really incomplete. You're just moving the baton down the line and asking the next guy to do it. I think guys that have an on-base percentage that's laden in doubles and triples and home runs is much more effective. But I get what they're doing. I understand why they're doing it. I just think it's a good blend of the two that makes it best.
Totally agree, Steve. I want to change things up a little bit because as a ball player, you've experienced one of the things that I think all ball players have a nightmare about, and that is getting some type of yips or having an issue throwing the ball. And we saw that a little bit with Altuve, and I saw your quote on it. Just explain to the people who've never experienced this what exactly is happening, and then how do you really pull yourself out of it?
Well, it's really in some ways very complex, in other ways it's as simple as a nose on your face. And I had 24 errors at the All-Star break in 1983. I went through it for about 2 months, and I was able to get over it. And the way I got over it is another whole story. But let me just get to the meat of this. Is when people were asking me about it in the middle of that, they said, you got a mental block, this is this mental issue, whatever. I can tell you that what Jose Altuve was going through, what I went through, what Dale Murphy went through, what lots of people go through, believe me. And I've had private conversations with players ducking into broom closets in stadiums that at the behest of the team asking me to talk to some of these guys. And so much that they don't want the press or anybody else to know it. I would hide out and talk to players at the stadium about these issues. And I've helped some that have gotten over this. But it's not about a mental issue. It has nothing to do with the mental cognitivity or anything like that. It is simply a temporary loss of confidence that these guys go through, because they can judge distances, they can speak clearly, they can drive a car, or they can reason. It's not anything to do with a mental incapacity or a mental breakdown or anything. It's a temporary loss of confidence that has manifested itself into this issue that you see about throwing the ball. Once the issue of gaining the confidence back, and this is done in practice, one step at a time, it's not an event, it's a process. And once you realize that you can deal with this and get over it by building the confidence back, this thing evaporates as fast as it came. And that's all that Jose Altuve is dealing with. If I were Jose Altuve, I'd be down in Florida right now arresting this problem, getting over it, and not having to sleep with it and eat with it every minute of the day until next spring. I would go get this thing arrested right now so I can enjoy my off season and go into spring training with a fresh mindset. I think that's what he needs to do.
Maybe he should consult with you. You're the expert on it. You certainly got over it and played another decade after that or more. So
yeah, and John, remember when I went to New York, my first year in New York, I led the league in fielding at my position. And a lot of it was because I had Don Mattingly at first base. But nonetheless, my numbers were definitely good enough to win the Gold Glove when you consider all the numbers, just the facts on paper. But I didn't win it because I was dragging along with me, some of those remembrances, if you will, of what happened in 1983. But it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you were fantastic in 1989 with your first year in New York. I think you hit .315. So I do recall that. You know what I want to ask you about now? You saw mostly happy times with the Dodgers with the 1981. You won the Rookie of the Year. You won a World Series, even if it was a strike-shortened season. 1988, you won that with that miracle team. But look, Kenley Jansen, and I think he's getting a little bit of a bad break here because he threw pretty good pitches. It was a bloop hit. So, he's had some rough times in the postseason. He's hearing it from the Dodger fans. You know, the Dodger fans have the reputation of being either laid back or beautiful Hollywood people. And, I mean, that's what you see on TV. But my experience, and I don't know if you have the same experience, is that Dodger fans can be tough. How do you think they're going to handle it if they go to 32 years without a World Series championship?
Listen, I'm doing some work for AM570 in LA, which is the Dodger flagship. And we got some calls to come in, and they – listen, if it's one thing about being in the World Series, that's sometimes enough for some teams. Not for the Dodgers that have been there the last 3 or 4 years that have won the division, as we mentioned, the last 8 years. They must win the World Series or they're never going to hear the end of it. And believe me, the Dodger fans can be tough. They can be very tough. Don't let them fool you about the beach and all that stuff. And so they need to win it, and I think they're in a good position to do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. They are a tough group. It's not all Mary Hart in the front there or Rob Lowe. You know, there's more fans than them. So, the last thing I want to ask you before we let you go, Steve, is I know you feel that they're going to do it this time. They do have kind of a bullpen game in six. Gonsolin was really good in the regular season. And you've got Buehler going after that. So you got to feel pretty good about it if you're a Dodger fan. What do you think? Why do you think they're going to win it? And you think they'll win it in six or does it go to seven? I'm assuming you think they're going to win, but I shouldn't assume, I guess. What do you think is going to happen?
I think they will, and I think that there's no way they should let this thing go to seven games. Absolutely no way. Depending on the feel of the game and what happens, I don't think they should think about Walker Buehler in game six. He should be absolutely reserved for game seven. They should have enough. Remember, when you talk about how great the bullpen is for the Tampa Bay Rays, and they're really good, their bullpen, the Dodger bullpen actually was better than them during the regular season. The Oakland A's were first, the Dodgers were second, and Tampa was third as far as ERA goes. That Dodger bullpen was outstanding this year. So I think that they have enough. I think Tony Gonsolin's bound to have a good game. It's not a big sample size about what he's done the last couple of years, but he's definitely qualified. The guy can pitch. He's got a wipeout slider. If he can get strike one on this team and get it to a point where he's got two strikes on them, he can wipe him out it's a splitter. He can wipe him out with that great splitter of his. So we'll see what happens. I think he's due to have a good game, and everybody else is pretty much all hands on deck for game six.
Yeah, just to follow up, since we all have great faith in Buehler and Josh Beckett had come back on 3 days rest and was able to do it, and some really star pitchers have, do you think that they're taking a chance here by waiting until game seven? Because I do think there'll be a lot of pressure on them if they get to a game seven to win that game.
Yeah, there will be. And like you said, John, correctly, anything can happen in a game seven. You know, a bad bounce, a guy can come up and have a great game. You know, a one-hung slider can be the big difference in the game. But with what Buehler has for game seven, man, he's got some wipeout stuff. I think he can carry it and win, even if he doesn't have his good secondary stuff. You know, those blisters on his fingers have been really prohibiting him from getting on top of that slider and finishing it. But it seemed in his last outing, he was able to do just that, coupled with that exploding fastball out of his hand. It's an amazing combination of pitches that he's got there. But I think they're going to save him completely for game seven. But again, they should have enough in game six to do it.
Well, very good, Steve. A fantastic job. And you are an outstanding talker as well as a great leadoff hitter. And I really appreciate your joining Tony Gwynn and me here on Big Time Baseball. So thank you very much, Steve. It's always a pleasure.